Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo, and as part of our new series on eye conditions, I have Tracy with me, who's going to do the interview with me. Hi.
Hello.
Tracy.
Hi.
And we're going to be interviewing Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Some of you will remember Jenny from her guide dog story about Patty and Janie. So we're going to be talking about aniridia today, which both Tracy and Jenny have got. So two very knowledgeable people with me. So do you want to start off by telling us what aniridia is, Jenny?
Okay, so aniridia is a rare eye condition. I think the word aniridia is Greek or Latin. Ani means without, and iridia means irises. So basically, it means that people with aniridia have no irises, which is the coloured part of the eye.
So what does that mean when, you know, what does that cause?
If you have no irises, basically, the job of the iris is to contract and expand the pupil, and so in different lighting conditions, and also it's responsible for depth perception. So people with aniridia will be extremely photophobic, meaning sensitivity to bright light or sunshine. And they also have difficulty from going from a dark place to a light place, or a light place to a dark place. And they have poor depth perception. And with aniridia, it's not just the iris that's the iris is missing, but the whole of the back of the eye is underdeveloped. So in most cases of aniridia, a part of the retina called the fovea is missing, and that means that most people with aniridia will be born with a degree of vision loss.
So you've talked about some of the difficulties that causes. Are there other eye conditions that are associated for people with aniridia?
Yeah, because the eye isn't developed properly, you can have several different eye conditions that are associated with it, the most common being nystagmus, which is wobbly eyes and eyes moving constantly. You can have glaucoma, cataracts, cornea problems, and detached retinas. And some people with aniridia will have all of these, and some will have none, and there's some that will have some. So it's a very broad spectrum.
So is aniridia hereditary, Jenny?
So aniridia is genetic. You can have it sporadic. So all cases of aniridia will start somewhere. So sporadic, it means that none of the your family members have aniridia, but when you do have aniridia, it's a 50-50 chance of passing it down to any children you have. And I should also say there's another type of aniridia called traumatic or acquired aniridia, which is when your iris is missing due to an accident, like a car crash.
Oh, right, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. But that's quite rare, and it doesn't present itself as the main case of aniridia, if that makes sense.
So you've mentioned that it's quite rare in the different forms that you've mentioned. What's your experience and what's reaction of medical people in terms of acknowledging the eye condition?
So I think it's 1 in 47,000 live births is the incident, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think there's a few people that are knowledgeable about aneurysmia in the medical profession, but then they have their own specialist area. There's not a doctor that specialises in aneurysmia. You can have glaucoma specialists that know quite a lot about aneurysmia. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So aneurysmia, does that start with somebody being partially sighted, and can that, I know with your experience, Jenny, yours has deteriorated. Is that due to the aneurysmia, or is that kind of connected events or connected conditions?
Everybody, like I said before, everybody is born with a degree of vision visual impairment with aneurysmia, and as I said, it's a broad spectrum, so some people will go throughout their lives with having very good partial vision and having none of the associated eye conditions. And then there's people like me who have probably all of the associated eye conditions and have no sight at all.
And are there any treatments or interventions that can be made for people with aneurysmia?
Not for aneurysmia itself specifically, but there are treatments for things like glaucoma surgeries, cataracts and cornea surgeries. But with the aneurysmic eye, the phrase less is more is key, because each time you have a surgery, because the eye is very delicate, it's a great risk to the eye, so they try and do they try and not operate unless they really need to. So people might have cataracts as a young baby, but they might leave them until they start to ripen, so that they don't have to operate until the cataract is impacting on the vision.
Right, so if it's genetic, have they found which gene causes the aneurysmia?
Yes, they have. So it's a gene called the PAX6 gene, so PAX6, and it's based on the short arm of the 11th chromosome. I can get very complicated here. Have two, there's a short arm and a long arm, and there's, I can't remember how many chromosomes, is it 47, 46? So it's on the 11th chromosome, short arm of the 11th chromosome, and that's also known as P, 11P, so that's where, and it's found on the 13th band.
So you are knowledgeable.
So you can also have a condition called Wagger syndrome that goes with aneurysmia, because aneurysmia is just one, is the PAX6 gene mutated or deleted. And with Wagger syndrome, or Wagger 11P deletion syndrome, as its proper name is, you have more than the PAX6 deleted. So you have a whole band, the whole of the 13th band deleted, plus some genes and surrounding the 13th band missing as well.
Wow, that's complicated.
So, yeah, it's very
lots of technical stuff there.
Yeah.
So can you give people an idea about some of the impact that aneurysmia itself causes from a day-to-day vision loss perspective at school, for example? Or, you know?
I said earlier, you can people with aneurysmia, the main problem is glare and photophobia, so sensitivity to light, and this isn't just sunshine, it's bright overhead lights, strip lights and artificial lights. And so if they're placed by a window to do their work, or in front of a window or behind a window, that could be very difficult for them because of the glare, because their eyes can't adjust to the different lighting conditions, can't shut out the glare. Also, the main things like visual impairment, they might not be able to see the whiteboard or an overhead projector, so they might need to sit near the front, and depth perception and balance can be a bit problematic, and if they have nystagmus, then focusing can be a big problem due to the nystagmus, and nystagmus can get worse when you're tired or stressed or ill, so that can be problematic as well. And if you have glaucoma, then you might have to take time off work or time off school to have surgeries, and generally you might have a lot of hospital, eye hospital appointments to monitor all the different eye conditions like the cataracts or the glaucoma or the cornea problems.
So there's quite a lot involved really, isn't there, with aniridia? Quite a lot of things to contend with on a daily basis really. Are there any things that people can do to, I'm guessing that maybe sunglasses, things like that can help?
Yeah, sunglasses, definitely. I know like quite a few people with aniridia who wear sunglasses inside as well as outside. Hats, peaked caps and things, because if the sun is really low in the ground, then sunglasses might not help. And also, because I didn't, when I had sun sight, I didn't like wearing sunglasses because it made all the colours disappear, and I lost, colour vision was really important to me, so the sunglasses blacked out everything and made me see even less than I normally saw. So I would wear a peaked cap instead of sunglasses. Things like monoculars, quite a few people with aniridia use monoculars, which is like a one-eyed monocular really, and they use that to read menus in McDonald's, things like that, and they might, depending on their vision loss, they might need magnification software on the computer or speech software on the computer, handheld magnifiers, and then also like for mobility, again it varies, some people don't need anything, some people have cymbal canes, some people use long canes, and there are several people with aniridia that have guide dogs.
What support is there for people with aniridia?
There's
with the kind of initial diagnosis, I guess I'm thinking more for parents that have children that are
There's the Aniridia Network UK in the UK, and it's run by people who have aniridia themselves, and so they understand the problems and challenges that face people with aniridia, and the website is www.aniridia, which is aniridia.org.uk, the Aniridia Network UK have an inquiries team, and they also have a befriending scheme for parents and people with aniridia to get in touch with each other. We also have Aniridia Network UK has a education consultant who we have something called the Aniridia Pupil Passport, which tells parents, well, gives an insight to teachers about the problems faced by children in going into school, like PE or maths or science kind of thing, that kind of making friends. It's written in the child's language, and it's it's to help teachers understand more about aniridia.
I That's brilliant. Well, we'll put all the information, all the support, the website details in the description of this interview so that it's easily accessible for you. And then you can get in touch with the Aniridia Network if you need to. Is there anything else that you'd like to say, Jenny, that we've not covered?
No. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, then I'd be more than willing to be in touch and say hi. And
yeah. So what ways would you be happy for people to contact you?
Probably email or Facebook.
Okay, so do you want to give details?
Yeah, so my email is jennylangley27, so that's JennyLangley27, no spaces at all, no capitals, at googlemail.com. And Facebook is Jenny Langley.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Jenny. Thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.